maybe just one or two questions, Tony. You talk about the funding, for example, and you refer specifically to Atlantic Philanthropies, which is obviously non-state funding, and you know, I've certainly seen a lot of the programmes advertised in the paper, you know, which are part funded by Atlantic Philanthropies. So it's really the economic question, and obviously there's a broader question in Northern Ireland as to whether we can continue to fund the diversity in sectors that we have. But then the networks themselves probably come with an overhead associated with working them and, you know, funding them as a society. So I'm just wondering what challenges you faced in terms of funding and what challenges might face us for funding those networks going forward.
Yeah, clearly in order to try and see whether this could work, this is where the fund was provided by the external foundations was very useful at allowing us to try out things, to experiment. But there's a recognition that that funding is not going to continue forever, and if the system depended on external funding coming in, then we would have been wasting our time. We had to work towards some sort of sustainable model for doing this. The current funding arrangements for schools are largely based on the number of pupils that are in a school. There's other factors involved as well, but it's largely based on pupil numbers. There's a waiting for pupils of different ages. But that creates an incentive for schools in a local area to grab as many pupils as they possibly can. And in a situation where there's a decline in roles, as for example is happening at the moment in the post-primary sector, the grammar schools are continuing to take in increasing proportion of young people, in many senses beyond what looks like their overt mission. But there's from the point of view of a single school, there's a very good logical reason for doing that, because each one of those pupils is worth £2,500 or £3,000. So if you have a funding system that incentivizes people to look to their own interest rather than the interest of others, then that's what's going to happen. What you need to do is to change the way in which funding operates, and use funding to actually incentivize the sort of behaviors that you want to see happening. At the moment, one of the problems in the system is that there's a lot of schools are able to provide a limited range of opportunity for young people, whether it's at GCSE level or A level or whatever. If schools work in collaborative networks, they can provide the same level of provision at a lower cost and at the same time give access to much wider opportunity to young people. So the point about collaboration is it will produce a much more effective system in that way. Right, in a purely theoretical sense, the most effective system of all, I guess, would be a fully integrated system. But the political point is that I don't think we're going to get there anyway quickly. And so the collaboration, I think, is a way in which you get around those sort of zero-sum arguments about whether we should have separate schools or integrated schools, and allows people to have, in some senses, the best of both worlds.
Mm-hmm. I just wonder on that political question. I was struck when I was listening to your contribution that, you know, maybe I'm 20-odd years out of the education system and you know, probably wasn't aware of the kind of sharing that's already going on, the amount of collaboration that's already going on. Just wonder in general, do you think the political sphere is aware of the work that is being done, or do we tend to look at the landscape in a simplistic manner?
I don't know, actually. I mean, we've been trying to ensure that there is as much awareness as possible about the sort of things that have been happening on the ground, so that whenever decisions are being made, people have some sort of a sense of the range of experience that's available. I think part of the difficulty is maybe that a lot of the bigger political parties are engaging on particular issues, and so they see everything through the lens of those particular issues. I do think there's been a sort of a reasonable articulation of some of this experience, certainly in local constituencies. Schools that are doing this, the teachers that are doing this, the places that it's happening, I think the local MLAs are very aware of it. We've been certainly working very hard with the education spokespersons for the different parties to try and ensure that they're aware of this as one of the options. There has been debates in the Assembly around the issue centred around exactly this sort of approach. The fact that shared solutions are now actually on the table, I think, is an indication of how much things have moved in a relatively short period of time. There's new language involved there, but the new language has now become mainstream.
Does anybody have a specific question for Tony? The intention now is that we will bring in some members from the other sectors, and there'll be an opportunity for questions and contributions later on. But could everybody please show their appreciation for Tony?
you for a long time with that.
Okay, conference, if I could just bring you to order, please. Really, the intention was to come off Tony's contribution and then try and have a broader debate about both the governance of schools in Northern Ireland, and by that we mean the different models of governance and different models of ownership and patronage, but also really try to take a look forward as to what a vision for a shared net inclusive education system might be for Northern Ireland. So we have, we're delighted to say we have representatives from across the education sectors and stakeholders from the education system in Northern Ireland. And just before I introduce them, I think Tony made the important point about where we are as a society. We are at a crucial juncture as far as education is concerned. Legislatively, where the education bill is currently at committee stage, and it seems possible that the new governing body, if you like, for education in Northern Ireland, the Education and Skills Authority, will be operational by 2013. In conjunction with the area-based planning that's been undertaken and the viability audits that Tony spoke at, we really are at probably a point of greatest change in the system probably in the history of Northern Ireland. So I'm delighted to say we've representatives from across the sectors and stakeholders in Northern Ireland. I'm going to introduce Mark Langhammer first, who is on my immediate left. And sorry?
Politically on the left.
Mark has a very interesting history, really, growing up as a community activist in Rathcoole, very active in the Labour Party and also various Labour groupings, the Newton Abbey Labour Party, has stood as the European candidate for Labour 87, was it? In 1989?
Can't remember.
But really he's here in his capacity as the director of the Association of Teachers and Lecturers in Northern Ireland, and maybe Mark will say a little bit about that organisation who it represents. But I'm hoping Mark can maybe speak really for teachers and obviously from a union perspective. Next to Mark is Brian McClinton. Brian was born in 1945 on the Shankill Road. He taught at Friends School in Lisburn for 36 years, teaching economics and politics and a little bit of history. He's here really in his capacity as a humanist. He's a lifelong humanist and an author of A Humanist Handbook and Ulster's Third Way. He's a director of the Humanist Association of Northern Ireland and also edits its magazine and website. Tony, we've already met, and on Tony's left is Reverend Trevor Gribben, who's Deputy Clerk of the General Assembly of the Presbyterian Church in Ireland, and serves as Secretary to the Church's Board of Education. In that capacity, he plays an active role in representing the transferring churches in educational issues. So you'll hear about a lot of educational issues, you'll hear about the Transfers Council, which is really the Council of Protestant Churches, and they really represents the Protestant churches in education and specifically the controlled sector. Currently not having a pastoral charge, he does continue to preach on issues across Northern Ireland and the Republic. And he says, more important than that, Trevor's a lifelong Arsenal supporter, and I guess we all have our crosses there. Mary Rolston is a founding principal of Millennium Integrated Primary School. Millennium opened in 2000 with 10 children and now has 200 pupils. Mary has worked in a variety of schools in England, France and Northern Ireland, including a Steiner School in Hollywood, and also studied education practice in America. She has a varied experience which has brought her into contact with the socially and academically elite, as well as the more marginalised children in our society. took a career break from teaching and became active in cross-community initiatives in our local area. So I'm hoping that Mary can speak to the integrated sector this afternoon. And finally, we're joined by Father Tim Bartlett, who is really here in his capacity as Executive Secretary of the Irish Catholic Bishop Conference, and is is well regarded as a media commentator. He has written, for example, on climate change, which is something I'm sure that we would all be passionate about. A former pupil of St Mary's...
I'm a believer, by
former pupil of St Mary's CBS, and has served as an advisor to Cardinal Brady and as I say, as Executive Secretary to the Communications Committee of the Irish Catholic Bishops Conference. So obviously Tim can speak to the Catholic sector. So I think it was important, I think as well as the politically, the education system in Northern Ireland being at a crucial point, we're as a party trying to inform our own education policy. I think it's only right to point out that we did have discussions, I suppose, both on the funding of denominational schools and what our vision for that is, and also on academic selection this morning. I think it'd be fair to say that the Green Party's vision is probably one which is much more toward a single system, we're perhaps... probably a vision that is a secular education system where really you really have to opt in to either religious instruction or religious education. So I'd perhaps just give each panel member an opportunity, perhaps just to say very little bit about yourself, or if you want to speak to about your organisation. And then I think the questions we're really trying to answer are that vision of a shared education system. So, Tony pointed out that a lot of political debate takes this view of schools as units and models, and we tend to look at the big picture, whether we should promote integrated education or non-denominational education. But you might want to say what your definition of shared education is, what your experience of it is, and briefly perhaps give a 3-minute contribution from the perspective of your sector or your stakeholder organisation. Can I begin with yourself, Mark?
I would take the widest view of shared education. We do in Northern Ireland have not only a balkanised system and a communally segregated system, we also have a very socially segregated system. And social segregation is very important because it is the prime determinant of educational performance. And by a factor of about 10 over anything else, including parental influence and so on. I was recently chairing the Dawn Purvis group, who looked at sort of educational disadvantage in the Protestant working class. And insofar as we found any sort of a silver bullet, it really was about social balance. And if you look at educational performance as between the two communities, you were really looking at a Catholic-maintained sector that was slightly better in terms of social balance than the controlled sector. If you looked at Catholic voluntary grammars, they were more socially balanced than predominantly Protestant grammars. So social segregation is a very important part of this shared future. And certainly when we as a union went to see Sir Bob Salisbury about his funding review, and I agree with Tony that funding does drive behaviour in schools, and that we do need a funding system that encourages collaboration and encourages sharing. But we were encouraging him to use some sticks and some carrots to ensure social desegregation. The other side of that coin is the biggest antidote is social balance in schools, and we don't currently monitor that very effectively. We think we should monitor social balance in schools, and we also think that people who wish to maintain socially segregated schools should pay through the nose to do so. In terms of the communal segregation, this is a difficult issue, and as a trade union, we haven't taken a view in terms of these viability audits as to whether school A or B should close or whether school C, D and E should amalgamate. We would generally like to tend towards a single system. However, the new Education and Skills Authority, as in my reading of the bill, We as trade unions did support a single authority, and on the grounds that it would be more effective, more efficient, that it would allow for more workforce flexibility and so on. Actually, it tends to encourage schools as islands. Each school will have its own scheme of management. Each school will have its own scheme of employment. They will have a tribunal to defend themselves from unwarranted interference from the authority. So actually what we could be heading towards is something moving towards the English Academy system. All of it's to play for, but I think that is in the contrary direction to the maximisation of sharing and collaboration, as Tony outlined.
Perhaps if I just talk about my own experience, you can see where my point of view is. I was born on the Shankill Road. I went to Mill Street Primary School, then I went to the Boys Model, then I went to Inst, then I went to Trinity. Now, before I went to Trinity, I make a qualification I'm talking about 40 to 50 years ago. Before I went to Trinity, I had never met a Catholic my own age. Never had I met a Catholic of my own age. And throughout all that time, from Mill Street to the Boys Model to Inst, I got the prejudices of that Protestant culture reinforced all the time by my peers, by my parents. No, they didn't force anything on me, but nevertheless, my father made his views known. The BB that I was in, all of those institutions, all those socialisation institutions, reinforced my own prejudices. And it was only when I went to Trinity that those views were challenged. Two of my best friends were a Dublin Jew and a Dublin Catholic who defied the ban. Now, I went to Trinity as a sort of a non-believer, but as a kind of a Protestant non-believer, really. I remember at Inst, three of us plucked up the courage to go to see the vice principal. The principal was away somewhere, to ask him if we could be excused RE lessons. RE there was a single lesson in RE right up to A level when you're doing your A level. And we went along to the vice principal and asked if we could be excused from RE lessons on the grounds that we were agnostics. And he said, well, that means you have an open mind, you can go along and listen. And we realised the mistake we made was we didn't say we were atheists. We should have said that instead. But I think even today, and this is one of the points I would make, but even today, I think in Northern Ireland, an A-level student has to get a note from their parents to be excused RE, whereas it's been changed in England. I think I'm right about that. In England, if you're 17 or over, you can excuse yourself from RE or assembly, the religious part of assembly, but not in Northern Ireland. That's how backward this place is. And I'm coming from the point of view that it is a very backward, conservative place. And these piecemeal reforms will not change the system. You need a radical overhaul of the system. Now, so one of the things that I'm arguing about here is that you need to have your own prejudices and background challenged, and it's not going to be challenged in segregated schools. The other thing that I think helped me was I went to Trinity. Not only did I get these other views, but I also studied philosophy. And that's what I would replace RE with, philosophy. Now, I know in some other countries there is, for example, in Norway, there is religion and life stances, I think it's called in Norway. In Scotland, it's called religious and moral education. I would have philosophy. And I would, in fact, there are, according to the United Nations, there are actually now 50 countries where philosophy is studied in schools. But the United Kingdom, and we follow the United Kingdom in this respect, it doesn't do philosophy really. There is now a philosophy course at Queen's, part of politics, philosophy, economics, that course. But it's not really there in schools in any big numbers. It should be there in every school. And I wouldn't exclude religion. I would have pupils learn about religion in philosophy classes. and that they can maybe learn from religion as well. I mean, not everything, I'm not saying everything coming from religion is bad, I wouldn't take that point of view at all, and in fact it's part of course our tradition here, so I think that it's important that children learn about religion, but they should also learn about other life stances. Here's another way in which this is society is totally backward. In most parts of England and Scotland and the Republic of Ireland too, humanism is on the RE syllabus. But our RE syllabus is drawn up entirely by Christians, which is a disgrace, an absolute disgrace in a pluralist society. And not only is it an absolute disgrace, but of course they had to give in to some other minority groups and include the two other religions in the syllabus at Key Stage 3. But that was as a result of pressure from outside. Now, that is completely and utterly wrong. They should not be allowed to dominate the setting of RE in that way. So that's, I mean, just some of the ways in which we are really backward and why only a radical change in Northern Ireland is going to work. These piecemeal reforms are not going to really change the system. They're not going to create a shared future. As far as I'm concerned, the CSI stands for Comprehensive, Secular and Integrated. I agree with much of what Mark has said about the need for comprehensive education as well. I think all those three things are linked together. But that, as we, most of us acknowledge here, the main parties don't see it that way. And as I say, we're going to be stuck in our old conservative ways unless we take a great leap forward in this society.
Thank you very much, Brian. Tony, you can get off the hook if you will.
Well, just a very, very, very quick point. Having spent, been involved in the debate around academic selection for over a decade, and seen the whole thing eventually run into the sand, I've come to the conclusion that I really have to be a pragmatist. And while it's important to have sort of aspirations about the sort of things that would be nice to have, if you're actually going to get real change on the ground, I think you have to be much more pragmatic and be prepared to compromise. And I think that's the only way things will actually move forward.
Okay, Trevor.
Tony, thanks. And Tony leads me into exactly what I wanted to begin with. If you notice the question you yourselves have put down for debate this afternoon, it's how do we achieve something? And one of the greatest difficulties in Northern Ireland for many of us is that we're not very good at seeking how to achieve real change. And real change often comes about through evolutionary change. Now, you might wonder if a Presbyterian's here promoting evolution, but this aspect of evolutionary change in Northern Ireland is vitally important. You know, it is a cliche to say we are where we are, but that's exactly where we are. And one of the dangers in Northern Ireland is try to lump too much in under every definition we come up with. And therefore, shared education becomes something that is so complex and complicated that we don't actually achieve anything because we try to achieve something that's unobtainable. I would have to say on behalf, not just of my own church, but I think of the other two main Protestant churches, that we would support almost 99%, probably 100% of what Tony said in his presentation. But we believe, and the facts are, that in the primary sector, for instance, 44% of schools are controlled, 46% of schools are Catholic maintained. Now, it's obvious to me, if we're going to enable young people to share an education together, it is those two sectors we have to encourage to come together in creative ways of forming, of sharing. And I agree with Tony, it's not the it's not the tokenistic go off on a trip to wherever together and say we've done it. It has to be based around sitting in a classroom together and sharing classes together. And I, and indeed the three Protestant churches at our various General Assemblies, Synods and Conferences have passed resolutions and debated fully and support fully the concept of shared education that Tony has articulated. It's not just a shared education programme at Queen's. Those who know the subject will know the work of the Fermanagh Trust in Fermanagh, will know the North Eastern Education Library Board's programme and shared at primary level. I could take you to a small village in County Londonderry, and I'll not talk about it because sometimes we name these things, the blur publicity doesn't help them. But a small village which has been scarred by what we call the Troubles, with a small Catholic maintained primary school a small controlled primary school where the Protestant community go to. And in that village now, over several years of sharing, encouraged by the Northeastern programme in this case, they now, on a Friday, have all their classes taught together. And the kids from each tradition meet together. Now, on a Friday, they don't go straight into history. And they don't go straight into RE. They're doing perhaps a softer subject. So maybe doing maths, geography, art, looking at culture a bit. They're aspiring to begin to tackle history together and maybe do it on a Thursday and a Friday. You know, to simply be told in that village that you have to close your two schools and go into this new one that's called shared and, worse still, I would suggest, secular. Those parents don't want to move that direction. Those schools don't want to move that direction. But slowly, they've come together. It's worked. One of Tony's projects is in Limavady. I visited that, where across sectors, across grammar and non-selective and secondary sectors, across Catholic and so-called Protestant schools, there are people coming together to be taught together in classrooms. I've been sat in classrooms with four different kinds of uniform. Now, I would love to see the day where there's only one kind of uniform, yeah. I would love to have one system of education, but we are where we are. And therefore, we have to move forward from where we are, and we've got to do what Tony hinted at towards the end in response to a question from your chairman. It is a shame and disgrace that this has not been mainstreamed in Northern Ireland. Indeed, the funding system of schools does not encourage sharing in education. In fact, it discourages it. We as churches have asked for change in legislation. So if a small controlled school and a small Catholic-maintained school wanted to come together and form a new model under a joint management or some kind of arrangement, that they could explore that. And I think colleagues in the Catholic Church have been open to that. The department have not produced the legislation to let that happen. The reality is that in all the years of the integrated movement, not a single, as Tony hinted, Catholic school has chosen to transform. And probably, as we look at the future, almost no controlled school now is probably going to transform. The integrated movement themselves have recognised that. So the way forward has to be to enable children and schools, where they are, to begin to share together, grow together, and evolve to being together. We would support that. And could I say this graciously? Christians have a story in the Old Testament of Daniel going into the lion's den. So let me state this and throw myself to the lions this afternoon. Could I say that from the perspective, and I think I'm speaking about the three Protestant churches and many, many people in the control sector who want to evolve and develop shared education, are committed to it, are going up down the country persuading boards of governors and others to embrace it, not to fear. Resolutions like your resolution 4 that you passed this morning do not help. Because many people say, well, shared education is just some kind of Machiavellian scheme to get secular education. Now, it's quite legitimate as a party for you to want secular education. It's quite legitimate for Brand to argue for that. That is a legitimate argument in a democratic society.
Thank you.
Every right to do it. As Brand would graciously give me the right to argue that Christian ethos should be in education. That's our right, and we will debate that, I'm sure, on many occasions. But to tie shared education to enable our children from different community backgrounds to be educated together with secular education makes many people in the churches just say, well, look, that was the agenda all the time, and we're not going there. And resolutions 4, which probably are, I assume, a visionary aspiration that the party has, are very different between the title of your own debate this afternoon, not my title, but your debate. How do we achieve shared education? I think we can't achieve it if we're saying in Northern Ireland it must be secular. Perhaps in some places on the ground as it evolves it will be secular, but in many places it may be people from different Christian traditions sharing together, and young Catholics and young Protestants being educated together. So I'd ask you to think long and hard, graciously as a party, about how we achieve these things and how sometimes our policy positions, actually, though we don't want them to be, can be a negative in seeking to achieve real change. Happy to be eaten.
Thanks very much.